Hello and welcome to the Manchester Is Red podcast. My name is Stephen Railston. We're recording this episode on a Friday afternoon, a couple of days ahead of Manchester United's semi-final against Coventry in the FA Cup, of course. I'm joined by Samuel Lucas. We've just tried to do a little bit of the first part there, Samuel, but I'll skip over those questions. And we'll just quickly, briefly discuss the under-18s win the league then. You talk about that. Fantastic season for them, of course. Beating Manchester City to the title. Those two sides will reoppose again in the Premier League Cup on Tuesday night at Lee. So potentially United could do the double, United's under-18s. You went into Carrington the other day to speak to manager Adam Lawrence, who was obviously doing his first season in charge, but he's done a wonderful job. What was that like?
It's always good to have that access. I think the club are happy to provide it when it certainly suits them, and the academy have been another success story this season, and in what has been a bad season for United, some positivity is never going to go amiss, and they should be shouting about the academy from the rooftops. I remember about 8 years ago when it was not long after Nicky Butt became the academy head, and he was, you know, effectively complaining to people at United that they weren't championing the academy as much as they should be. And the year before, there wasn't even an academy head. After Brian McClair left, that role was vacant for far too long. John Murta and the club secretary at the time, John Alexander, were jointly running it. And you only have to look at the work that United have done at academy level since Butt came in 2016. And then that's been followed up by Nick Cox. And there have been so many success stories, whether it's the players coming through, whether it's the work Kieran McKenna did at academy level with the under-18s over an 18-month period. I think it was best part of 2 years. Now, of course, it's Adam Lawrence who's overseeing it. And it was, yeah, there were some interesting tidbits to come from it. I think that feature will run on Tuesday morning to coincide with the day, the game that day against City, Lee Sports Village. It's a pity it's at Lee, but that can't really be helped given that Old Trafford is hosting a game the following evening for the first team against Sheffield United. And unlike City, there's not a mini Old Trafford as well. Hopefully there will be in however many years to come, should they proceed with Sir Jim Ratcliffe's preferred plan of doing a complete, you know, a new build of Old Trafford on the same site. I think that it's absolutely fundamental that they complement a new stadium with a mini stadium for the women's team and the academy team. I think everybody would prefer that. It would get more people going to those games as well, given that it's far more accessible than Lee Sports Village. As good as the setup is there, it's far too remote. And I thought it was quite a charming video as well of the players and the staff coming back from Wolves on Tuesday and the welcoming party there, giving them a round of applause, Erik ten Hag and Darren Fletcher being present as well to congratulate them on what has been a terrific season. And as I said, that piece will, I've got to wade through, I think, about 35 minutes from the interview. So there's a lot to, there are a lot of words to transcribe and a lot to go through, but it's needless to say, it's been a very good season for them. You only have to look at the exposure that the youngsters are getting in terms of being in matchday squads, and there'll be a few who miss out next Tuesday because they'll be needed on the Wednesday night by Ten Hag, as we saw at the weekend. Harry Amass, Ethan Wheatley, Habib Okoneyi were on the bench. But those lads will be desperate to play in this cup final game as well against Manchester City. There haven't been too many finals, it feels like, between the clubs at academy level. It felt, certainly in the days of the Manchester Senior Cup, it seemed like there were more occasions where there was some silverware to play for, but that's not quite been the case in recent years. So it's certainly something that that will get a lot of traction on the evening. And of course, we'll be sending there. I think you'll be there, won't you? For that one, so it's definitely, you know, it's a game that should be looked forward to. That United fans should look forward to, I should say. And the only pity about the academy this season is the manner in which they went out of the Youth Cup, because the draw really did open up for them, and they should have been beating Swindon Town's youth team, but they froze on that night. And it was maybe the, if you were to play that game 100 times, United win it 99 times, but that was the one occasion where they froze.
There's some brilliant scenes at the full-time whistle. They played Wolves on the Tuesday, and obviously that result sealed the league title. It was a 2-1 win. There's a youngster just celebrating and punching the air and embracing each other and singing Campiones as we were in a huddle. So that was great to see. They obviously returned to Carrington to celebrate and had a sit-down meal. I noticed there were some burgers on the plate, so I presume they were protein burgers or some form of that. And then obviously there was a moment when Ten Hag came around and shook hands with all the young players, and I thought it was noticeable that he kind of took a bit of an extra moment to speak to Harry Amass, of course.
Harry Amass.
If anyone remembers last year after the Carabao Cup final, and he spoke to Kobbie Mainoo and he kind of put his arm around him, and he was asked about that recently in a press conference. I think you asked the question actually, Samuel, and he said...
I did, yeah.
And he said, you noticed, don't we? Of course, we noticed that, Erik ten Hag. But yeah, it kind of felt significant because Harry Amass has had a brilliant season and he perhaps could be the next player to make his debut and obviously reach that landmark of being the 250th player from the academy to make their senior bow. Samuel, moving on then to Coventry. Is an unchanged team on Sunday. We kind of discussed earlier in the week after the Garnacho incident that he could be dropped, but you said, look, with 5 days of training under his belt and the news cycle does move on, it kind of feels like you could start, doesn't it?
It wouldn't be a surprise whatsoever. I think whatever Ten Hag does there, whether he decides to extend his talking to a demotion, I think that would be understandable. If he starts him, it would be understandable. I don't think any of us are expecting him to not be in the squad at all. He's certainly going to be at Wembley. He's going to be in the dressing room, and the gut instinct would probably be that he will start that game as well, because he started the past 30 games and there's been an 8-day gap between these matches. He's been United's best player this season for me. That said, you can't let a 19-year-old get ideas above his station or think that he knows better than the manager or that anyone should tolerate him undermining the manager in the way he did. It was totally unacceptable. And we're speaking before the press conference. Ten Hag will get asked about it. I imagine he'll clam up, as he often does during the opening open section of his pre-match press conferences, and be quite reticent on the matter, because it feels like it was quite a while ago now, even though it's been a very quiet week. And he'll just want to move on and look ahead to the game on Sunday. And as I said, if Garnacho starts, so be it. If he doesn't start, so be it. I think you've got to be understanding of it, of whatever decision Ten Hag makes there.
So a potential that it could be an unchanged team then. I mean, you look at the other options who are available. There's limited kind of things you can do with that side at the moment, with the players who don't have injuries. Could Anthony come into the side? He's been quite bright off the bench in the last few weeks. Mason Mount as well. There was some interesting quotes from Anthony actually saying he felt like he was really turning things around recently. I felt his performance at Stamford Bridge potentially could be that turning point. Could he start and be given the nod for the semi-final?
He could, or he could be on the bench again. In terms of a turning point, he was good at Chelsea. I'd say it was his best performance for United, but that was 2 weeks ago. He was not robust or fit enough to start in the next match, and then he wasn't available for the Bournemouth game because he couldn't come through the training session on last Friday. So as a turning point, you know, I mean, United, it felt like false positivity, that story. Yes, his performance against Chelsea the other week was positive, but he's not directly built on it. And the chances are that there's every chance that he'll be on the bench again on Sunday when they play Coventry, despite Alejandro Garnacho being very passive aggressive on Twitter last week, despite Marcus Rashford performing the way he's performed this season. So if he's not starting at the weekend, I think any notion that it is a turning point, it kind of goes out the window. But there was a lot of encouragement to extract from his performance against Chelsea. It's just a pity that, going off what Ten Hag said, he didn't have the robustness, or he wasn't physiologically ready to play two games within the space of, what would that have been, 72 hours, wouldn't it? And if you're not able to do that, United, and I appreciate that he's not started many games this calendar year, but if you can't do that at a team where you want to be having two games per week, That's something that's got to be addressed. But let's face it, he's not the only one who's had issues medical issues or issues with the medical staff this season, but it just seemed like it was a gradual breaking down of a player who played over 100 minutes at Stamford Bridge. Then he can't start at Liverpool, and then he can't even, you know, he's not even fit enough to get in the squad the following week against Bournemouth. And again, it's not a great ringing endorsement for the medical department at United.
Coventry lost 3-0 against Birmingham last weekend. Birmingham are real trouble in the Championship and could go down this year. That looks quite likely if there's some managerial changes. And yet Coventry struggled in that game. They're 8 points off the playoffs. They sit 8th in the table. On paper, United should be beating this lot.
They should, yes. without doubt. These are like the tunnel questions after a game where the reporter's just making a statement rather than asking a question. I don't watch a lot of Coventry City, unsurprisingly, given that there's always a lot of football on, and I don't think they're on very often as far as the Championship goes. The only time I'll have watched them all season was probably the last 10 or 15 minutes of their Wolves game, which was pretty enthralling end to a game, even by this season standards. But I think you look at Ellis Sims, who's an interesting story in that he was a trialist at United. He came through the academy at City. He's been around the block, having played in the Premier League, the Championship, League One, and the Scottish Premiership. And I think he's got the skill set to certainly unnerve Willie Kambwala the way Dominic Solanke did last week for Bournemouth. I think if anything, this is probably Kambwala's biggest challenge as a first teamer at United, even though he's played against much better forwards at West Ham. It was Jared Bowen and Mohamed Kudus, Paqueta as well. Liverpool's front three are better than West Ham's attackers. And last week, coming up against Solanke and to a lesser extent, Justin Kluivert. But Solanke has had a really good season in the Premier League. And there's a reason why Ellis Sims is playing in the Championship, having had a reasonably decent role in Everton's running last season. I remember he got an equaliser at Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. But because of the occasion and because of the scrutiny that's going to be on him and the pressure of playing at Wembley as well, the game and the challenge takes on a different dynamic. And Sims is quite a physical forward as well. And although there's not a big age gap between him and Kambwala, it's sufficient enough, and given his level of experience as well, that I think Harry Maguire has got to keep an eye out on Kambwala, as he has done in recent games as well. But Maguire's role is becoming more important with every week at United now, which is, of course, ironic given that Ten Hag was more than prepared to sell him in the summer, despite his recent attempts at revisionism, where he said we're always happy with Harry Maguire. I mean, he's very conveniently leaving out the fact that United agreed a fee from West Ham for $30 million for him. And it sounds like there's some other interesting details about their attempts to get Maguire out the door that I think will eventually come to light at the appropriate time. But Maguire's had as we discussed, I can't remember if it was on Monday or last week, but he has had a decent season. And I think with the run-in where he's certain to start every game pretty much, provided he remains fit, he could end up looking back on this season as a good season or a very good season, especially if United win the FA Cup.
It's been a pretty disappointing season up until now for United. Of course, results just haven't been good enough. Performances, crucially, haven't been good enough, with some bright moments. And throughout those performances and on the podcast, we've been kind of sitting here and saying, well, they could still qualify for the Champions League and still could win the FA Cup. Champions League now looks very unlikely, of course, but they could still win the FA Cup. But that does increase the pressure on this match hugely, doesn't it? It's a hugely important game for Ten Hag and his future.
It's the biggest game of the season. In terms of his future, I think it's an easy narrative for people to say it has a bearing on his future. Now, of course, it does in the sense that if United were to lose this game, then the only reason for him to go back into Carrington would be to clear his desk. But the flip side of it, in terms of does it help him stay, I'm still not sure about that. I don't think that a properly well-run football club would be judging a manager on a cup run. I think if you're doing that, then you're not fit enough to run a football club, because we've seen before with cup runs, very ordinary teams, very poor teams even, can go all the way and win it. And teams with really long odds can go all the way and win it. A league season, apart from, you know, in my lifetime, apart from, of course, the anomaly of Leicester, it's you look at it and you think that's a pretty reliable gauge of where teams are at, and teams still make decisions based on the league form and United's league form and everything beyond, everything outside their FA Cup run is far more relevant to coming down, making that judgment on and that decision on Ten Hag's future than the FA Cup run. Because I think the FA Cup run, they obviously dismissed a couple of teams who are from the lower leagues. You know, grit prevailed over guile against Forest. The Liverpool game was extraordinary, a wonderful, wonderful day for United, and you know, people crying, you know, shedding tears of joy at the end of that. But it was a game won on emotion, and you can't make emotional decisions as the power broker or power brokers at a football club. So it you know, sums up his situation in that even if they win, it's still feels like there's a bit of a lose-lose situation there, in that, okay, if you get past Coventry to get to an FA Cup semi-final, it doesn't, you know, say, I mean, in terms of the chance of him being sacked or not, it doesn't put it back in the balance in his favour. It's still teetered in the way, it's still teetered that way, in that everyone thinks that he will go at the end of the season because they're playing a Championship side in an FA Cup semi-final. Everyone expects them to win. So I don't think the dynamic of his future in terms of the possible positive sense of him staying would change greatly if United were to win. Of course, they want to win. They want to get to another FA Cup final. And if they go all the way, and particularly if they were to beat Manchester City in the final, then it would be an unpopular decision among many United fans if they did sack the manager after beating Manchester City at Wembley, and the manager's got two trophies two seasons in. But there's a hell of a lot of context, and there's a hell of a lot of evidence this season that suggests that they've it doesn't suggest, factually they have gone backwards. And just look at the state of play in the Premier League; they're 13 points off fourth, and fortunately, this coefficients nonsense, it doesn't look like that England will get that fifth place into the Champions League either. So that escape route into the Champions League, if you like, it seems to have been blocked now.
To the manner how they've performed as well, as I've said multiple times in this podcast, I mean, only Luton Town have conceded more shots in the league than United this season. And you go into this game of Coventry, they might only be in the Championship, eighth in the Championship, but when United are conceding shots at that worrying rate, surely Coventry are going to fancy the chances of at least having a few opportunities on the day of scoring.
Well, I think that's kind of like why I mentioned Ellis Sims earlier. I think if you're Coventry and looking at their form since the quarter final, I think they've won two and lost three. That would tell you that they've had one eye on this occasion, and for some, it will be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, but it's easy to forget that Coventry were at Wembley last season for the playoff final when they lost to Luton in the penalty shootout. But it is different with the FA Cup, and it's certainly different when you're coming up against Manchester United at Wembley. I think the last time Coventry would have played at Wembley in the FA Cup, it must have been the 1987 final when they shot Tottenham, back in the days when the FA Cup was a far bigger deal and far more cherished and not being bastardised as it was on Thursday by football's bureaucrats. And you just look at the depleted nature of United's defence, you look how thin they are in attack, you look at the imbalance in midfield, you look at the goalkeeper who is prone to letting in saveable shots. Of course, and Coventry have also had an 8-day gap between games. So they should back themselves to unsettle United. And I can see that happening. I can see them unsettling United. Whether they'll beat United, I think that's still a long shot. But it's very seldom been plain sailing for United in their wins this season. And I would be pleasantly surprised if this is a straightforward FA Cup semi-final.
And I still presume that you're of the belief that Mason Mount shouldn't be shoehorned into this game in midfield. Obviously, Casemiro's drop-off has been quite remarkable over the last few months. Well, this season, really. He was really poor against Bournemouth again. His passing, his positioning, his lunging in and challenges quite uncharacteristically. It would be a big, big call to remove him from the team at this stage of the competition, wouldn't it?
And start someone who has not started since, when would his last start have been?
Luton Town show?
Newcastle? I don't think he started that game, did he? Newcastle in the League Cup. So you're going back to 1st of November, I think it is. I think there was a missed opportunity to start him at Chelsea, but Ten Hag said he's got to stay fit, and I completely get that rationale. And unfortunately, Mount has stayed fit for, I think, 4 or 5 weeks now. He's been training, but he's lost momentum from getting that goal at Brentford, and that's a pity for him, because as I said, I'd have been in favour of starting him against Chelsea, but it's not happened. There's not been a start since, and it would certainly raise eyebrows if his name was among the starters on the team sheet at Wembley.
And on the face of it, it kind of looks like Rasmus Højlund's regressed back to the player he was in the first half of the season since returning from his injury. But as I said on the earlier podcast, when me and you did it earlier in the week, he's just not had the service, surely, has he? I mean, you watch him and Rashford, there's been a few moments when they've been bickering. There was a moment at Bournemouth, to be fair, where he did kind of mess it up and he should have laid it off. But I don't think United have been getting the ball into his feet as regularly as they should be.
No, I think we mentioned all this on Monday, didn't we? But there are still times where you look at him and he's so callow and so naive in the way he uses the ball. And United haven't helped at times in recent weeks. Certainly the tactics at Brentford were just so counterproductive in terms of trying to go long to a striker who was up against three centre-backs. And earlier in the season, I didn't buy the excuse that he wasn't getting service, because he had a lot of really good chances to score goals before he did get his first Premier League goal on Boxing Day. It's difficult to recall a chance he's had since he came back into the team. But that's why they needed a proven striker in the summer rather than an unproven striker, because a proven striker would make something happen for himself. And you see that the way Harry Kane operates. Sometimes he's a number 10, sometimes he's a number 9, but he was always going to comfortably outscore Rasmus Højlund this season. Højlund had a very, very good February, but that has pretty much been an anomaly in his season. And we can't go in too hard on him, because you have to remember the starting point that he was signed as someone who was callow, who was really signed for his potential. But even Skimaker has already scored more goals for Atalanta this season than Højlund scored last season. And I don't think, as I said, I don't think the comparison is entirely invalid when there's only a 4 or 5 year age gap between them. So it's been a bedding in season essentially for Højlund, and he's still got time to have the last word and to his season on an individual basis to be remembered as a success. It was poor planning from United, and Ten Hag was again saying last week he thought that their preparation for the season was fine with Højlund, Martial and Rashford. Okay, I don't think they could account for Rashford's form falling off the edge of a cliff, but you could account for Martial being injured or not playing enough or not scoring enough, because he was doing that for 3 years before the start of this season. And did anyone really realistically expect Højlund to be scoring 20 goals this season? I don't think so. His goal scoring record at his previous clubs was very mediocre. So it's kind of played out as expected, and that's the alarming thing. And that's more evidence. It's evidence why the football director has fallen on his sword, because, I mean, going back to the summer, we were being told that with Højlund, oh, there'll be some games that he doesn't play and Rashford can play up front. And I'm thinking, one, you've not even mentioned Anthony Martial there, who is the other number 9. Two, you're talking about moving a player who's just had his best season on the left to up front, where we all know that he's not good enough to play there. And even he knows he's not good enough to play there, Rashford. And what happens the start of the season? They have to play Rashford up front because Martial still isn't fully fit. And they decided to press ahead with Højlund signing, even though he had an injury as well. So however way you look at it with United, in terms of that situation, it's just more it's more poor planning. But I said that, must have said that, written that months ago, probably said that in pre-season even.
Well, there's no better place to score than Wembley, so let's hope he gets back up and running on Sunday afternoon. Just a quick mention to our podcast with Alan Keegan, otherwise known as the voice of Old Trafford, that will go out on Wednesday at 12 p.m. I did that interview yesterday with Alan and it was a very good listen, so make sure to check that out. In the meantime, thanks for your time, Samuel.
Thank you, Stephen. See you at Carrington.
And thanks to the... Yep, definitely see you at Carrington very shortly. And thanks to the listeners, as usual. Have a great weekend. Take care.